It's Friday, August 11th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, man. And joining me to do just that is the one and only, the fantastic Andy Behrens. Andy, by the time people are listening to this, you and I actually might be together IRL because we are both headed to the Fantasy Football Expo this weekend. I'm excited to see you, buddy.
Really excited for it. I believe this is your first expo, right? It's just a great event that Bob Long has thrown together. It's also like we've preseason football this weekend. We got the expo. Like I've got one live draft under my belt already, and this really feels like the fantasy season is ramping up now once the expo hits. So I'm very much looking forward to it. A live and in person podcast. Can't wait for that.
Yes, we will be doing a live and in-person podcast from the Fantasy Football Expo, Andy and I. Now, I'm not going to sit here and do like a Fantasy Football Expo preview because I would guess that 99% of the audience does not care and probably doesn't even want to hear about it. But I will say, Andy, I know you are pretty like me hanging out with you at the expo because you're right. This is my first one. I feel like it is kind of a kingmaker event. Like you are kind of the kingmaker there. You know everybody. Everybody knows you. You're a very popular guy. I'm just personally nervous like, ooh, is everybody going to find out how like weird I am in real life? You know, that's kind of how I'm feeling going into this, but I am very excited to see you and I am very excited to be there.
I feel like you're about to find out just how like sort of gloriously weird the entire industry is, right? No one stands out for their weirdness at this event, I promise you.
Well, it's a giant fantasy football conference. Having to explain to my mother where I'm flying to this weekend, that was a treat. I'll just leave it at that. But we have serious business to attend to here, Andy. Again, we're not just going to be previewing the Fantasy Football Expo because it's still positional preview week here on the show. And I know what you're thinking out there. What are you talking about? You guys are done with the positions. You talk quarterback. You talk running back. You talk wide receivers. You talk tight ends. That's the positions, right? You're wrong. There are still two other positions that the vast majority, and I don't want to hear a bunch of chirping from the people out there, the vast majority of people draft on their fantasy teams. Andy, they said it couldn't be done, or very least, they said it wouldn't be done or maybe shouldn't be done. But here we are with a kickers and defenses preview show. That's what we are talking here today.
Folks, if you listen to one preview show, make it the kickers and defenses. It's really the most, I mean, this is where fantasy football really becomes chess, not checkers, I think.
And it's going to be we're going to take it very seriously, Andy and I, two notoriously very serious guys. That is what we're going to do here. But that's not actually all we're going to talk about today. We are going to actually recap our most recent staff mock draft, which was a dynasty startup mock. I'm honestly very, very excited to talk about that. I'm tempted to just blow through everything else here, but I won't. I will be professional and I will take it seriously. So first, we do have some light news to touch on here, Andy, before we get into kickers and defenses. Zach Taylor spoke on Joe Burrow's calf injury, saying the timeline is several weeks from when I said several weeks, which I love, by the way. That's like, I told you when it was going to be. That's what I said. That's what it is. I feel like it's something I do all the time. Anyways, he also this comes, Andy, after Jamar Chase said that Burrow should just wait and come back week five. Our own Charles Robinson on his podcast thought it was highly suspicious that Jamar Chase dropped this specific and seemingly random. If you look at their schedule, it's a seemingly random schedule based week. So, you know, Charles, not a stranger to the tinfoil hat, put that on and maybe wondered if Joe Burrow had said something to Jamar Chase, like, yeah, I might be back in week five. Are you concerned at all about these Bengals players if Joe Burrow is not available for the first 5 weeks?
First of all, it is a very good point by Charles. It is weird specificity, right? It's as if he said, you know, me personally, if it were me, I wouldn't come back until, say, October 4th, right? Like that's just a weird,
yeah,
it's a weird thing to throw out there. There's probably something to it. I haven't adjusted for this in ranks yet. I think that as a practical matter, and listen, as part of the Fantasy Football Expo, I've got a couple of drafts coming up over the weekend. I think I'm going to find that like when Joe Burrow's name is next in queue, I am looking at another position, right? Because I just don't know. Like if there's a real possibility this is going to start missing games into the regular season, I mean, there's a lot of good quarterbacks out there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and the guys behind him, I feel pretty good about. You know, I feel pretty good about Justin Herbert. I feel pretty good about Justin Fields. I feel pretty good about Trevor Lawrence. Like, It's not that difficult to let somebody else take the plunge on Joe Burrow. So that may in fact happen, and I may have to move on him in the ranks. I will say we did see him walking around the practice field. Like there's some footage of that, and he's got a sleeve on the calf, but he's like walking around just fine. He's not in a boot or anything of that nature. So there's still time here. We'll see. We wouldn't expect Joe Burrow to get any preseason action anyway. So we'll see where this is in a month. Hopefully it's not. I mean, obviously, when he went down, the initial fear was like Achilles. His reaction to the injury as it happened was really strong. So there is a pretty significant level of concern. I haven't moved in the ranks yet, but sometimes what it really takes is like, you know, I've got a couple of drafts that I really care about coming up. And if I find myself avoiding Burrow in those drafts, then I'm probably going to have to lower him in the ranks.
Trevor Siemian, who you're familiar with his work, he is the current backup quarterback for the Cincinnati. Oh, I mean, honestly, though, Andy, I can't remember now. It's just all the days starting to run together. I know I said this to somebody on the podcast. I feel like that's not the worst case scenario for like a pure, just a backup, like nobody that you'd ever think about starting. I kind of feel like that's not the worst case scenario. If, for example, you're drafting Ja'Marr Chase in the first round, it's like, okay, Trevor Siemian's got to throw him passes for a few weeks. It's probably not the worst. Again, it just could be worse at backup quarterback than Trevor Siemian. I do think, though, your point about Burrow is well taken, that at this point, he wasn't really a guy I was considering anyways at like the 37th overall pick where he goes. And I feel good enough about not just the guys that I have in the same quarterback tier with him, but I feel perfectly fine if I don't take one of the top four guys, just waiting and waiting and waiting. Like I know this is like a clickbaity thing to say, but it's like Joe Burrow is kind of on my do not draft list right now.
Yeah. I mean, Justin Herbert, who goes a little bit later than Burrow, has already had a 5,000 yard season, right? We think that things are sort of trending up there, better coordinator. He's going to be healthy this year. Like there's just so many options right behind Joe Burrow that you would have already reasonably projected them for very similar numbers. So I don't feel like I'm like aggressively avoiding Joe Burrow. And if Joe Burrow actually falls in a draft to like QB9 or something like that, I'm probably going to jump all over that. It does mean that, you know, if you're drafting right now, you would probably have to draft a second quarterback, which is not ideal in a one QB league, but might be worth it for the potential payoff of Burrow late in the season.
Let's move on to as Kareem Hunt's world turns here. Kareem Hunt, we know, is in New Orleans, did a workout, was expected to sign, and then was told, you know, Indy got on the blower and was like, hey, buddy, no, you want to come up here, pal. Don't you sign with the Saints. Come up here and work out with us. He then leaves Indianapolis without a deal, which was kind of surprising given how hard they pushed for him, and maybe not a good sign of what he looked like in a workout, right? The Colts end up signing running back Jason Huntley. Andy, I'll leave you to give me the advanced scouting report on Jason Huntley. reportedly, Hunt has interest from other suitors. Again, maybe the Saints, maybe it's someone else, and I kind of think I know why. There's sneaky a few injuries that matter at the running back position right now. Number one, Kareem Hunt's old team, the Cleveland Browns. Kevin Stefanski, the head coach there, said that running back Jerome Ford has a hamstring injury and he's week to week. The Browns were seemingly counting on Jerome Ford to be like their backup running back, you know, and he's a guy who's rather unknown. So this, again, people out there are like, who the hell is Jerome Ford? There's been a lot of positive buzz about Jerome Ford. A lot of fantasy analysts have been like, you need to take Jerome Ford in the last round of your drafts because he's the clear running back two to, you know, Nick Chubb. I'm sure we brought him up on the program before. And then also Cardinals, unfortunately, man, Marlon Mack, who's had an Achilles tear before, suffered an Achilles tendon injury. He's going to miss the entire 2023 season. He just got there. And, you know, that's still a pretty wide open depth chart behind James Conner. So, Andy, I kind of wonder if Kareem Hunt and, frankly, all these boys, you know, all the veteran running backs right there are just like, hey, it's already starting to happen. You know, sneaky running back injuries. We know the deal with what's happening in Indianapolis with Jonathan Taylor. Like, opportunity is going to arise for the running back position. So the common thought, Andy, is that these guys are getting boned from like a salary perspective. And I'm sure they're not getting the money that they want. But I also kind of wonder if some of these vets are sitting there thinking, we need to jump on an opportunity here when an injury happens.
Yeah, I think especially in consideration of how all of these guys, and there's a musical chairs game going on at running back right now and a whole bunch of teams that could use additional running back depth. You know, you named like half of them, but there are many more. I feel like Dalvin Cook is the only one who should really be thinking, you know, like there's a group that includes Leonard Fournette, who was not great last year, but caught a bunch of passes. Kareem Hunt, who really took a step back last year. Zeke Elliott, who took a step back last year. And then there's like Dalvin, who was good. And I think Dalvin might be, he should be thinking about like a salary number that he reasonably expects to make this year. Some of these other guys should probably just be looking to hang on in the league and find opportunities to actually get carries. Cause like, you know, Kareem Hunt got a lot of the same opportunities that Nick Chubb was getting last year and averaged like over a yard per carry less than Chubb did. He was not good at the goal line. He really wasn't good in any situations. Kareem Hunt is sort of hanging on. I don't think he's going to be a huge fantasy factor wherever he lands. I actually thought that like there was a little bit of buzz around it on social platforms when we thought he was going to the Saints, but I thought that was a particularly bad place because I feel like they have their guy for the future in Kendre Miller. They have a really good player who coaches love in Jamal Williams, and they have Kamara coming back too. So like, I don't know what Kareem Hunt was going to do. Once we got 4 weeks into the season, like I don't think he was going to be active, at least not the version of Kareem Hunt that we saw last year. So I don't have a high level of enthusiasm for him in particular. Again, there are some other guys out there who could make some situations pretty messy in a hurry. Like the Vikings occur to me as one of those jobs that like we're not talking a lot about the Vikings adding a running back, but if the Vikings added a running back, that would be a huge problem for Madison. And it would, you know, all of a sudden we would see a great level of interest in whoever it is, whether it's Hunt, Zeke, Fournette. Like there are still some teams that can sign some players and it can really mess things up.
There's talk out of the Vikings camp too, that none of those backups behind Madison have really stepped up, which you could take as, okay, well, hey, Madison is going to play basically every down. And if they don't sign anybody, that's probably the case. But you could also take it just like you said, that they might be like, yeah, these young guys are not stepping up. Everybody thinks we're going to stink this year. We don't think we're going to stink this year. We want to keep competing. So let's go sign one of these vets. And I mean, I think that's kind of the Kareem Hunt part of it is, I think that was the Colts' pitch was, don't sign with the Saints. Come sign with us. Like our starter hates us right now. Doesn't want to ever play for us again.
Yeah.
If this doesn't get better, if Jim Irsay doesn't keep mucking this situation up, you can come here and get like, 200 carries this year. Very, very realistically, right, for a guy like Kareem Hunt. And I mean, the fact they didn't sign him again, maybe that's not a good sign for how Kareem Hunt looks right now. But that's kind of my point. Is I think all of these guys are just, I don't think the salary is a part of it. Like you said, I think they are just, except Dalvin Cook, who probably does want to be paid a certain level. And I think that's the impasse there with him and the Jets or whatever.
Yeah.
I think these guys are all lying in wait for what is the opportunity that is going to be created by an injury. And some of these ones are sneaky there so far, but there could be others that are on the way, of course.
Yeah, for sure. If I'm Kareem Hunt, I'm a lot more interested in the Colts than the Saints. Cause again, I don't see what my job is in October if I'm with the Saints and everybody's still healthy, right? Like there is a path to touches for Indianapolis for sure.
All right, let's get to it. Talk about saving the best for last, baby. It's kickers and defense day on position preview week. We are not going to follow the same format that we have for quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers. I mean, my God, imagine me subjecting you to kicker ranking debates between Andy and I, or DSTs to make the leap this year discussion. But I do want to focus on kickers first. And honestly, Andy, I mean, you've been working for Yahoo since I was basically, you know, like in high school. Okay. So you've done plenty of, you've got real thoughts on kickers. I don't. So Andy, I will step in here, but honestly, I cede the floor to you with an apology that I just rather implied that you're an old man.
No, it's fine. Actually, I need to get used to that because as soon as I hit the ground in Canton for the Fantasy Expo, I hear that. I start hearing, oh man, I read you in high school. I'm like, oof.
I'm warming you up. I'm warming you up for that talk.
Yeah, it's important that I steel myself for that. I'm very old. The first thing that I will say about kickers is that people should play the formats that they like. And I want as many people playing fantasy as possible. And I want people playing, you know, in leagues that they enjoy with the settings they enjoy. So if you want to drop kickers from your league, I get it. Fine. Again, play the format you like. Not everything is for everyone. It bothers me when people use as the basis for that decision this idea that kicker scoring is random, because that defies your actual experience of watching football over many years, right? It is plainly not random. We have published some things at various points over the years that make it clear that it is not. Jen Akins published a piece maybe a month ago that we ran at Yahoo and that was published to 4 for 4, and it was about debunking the idea that kicker scoring is random. It has correlations to stuff like, on a weekly basis, implied team totals over the course of a full season. Kicker performance is highly correlated with just like passing efficiency and overall passing yardage. Shockingly, the best offenses often produce the best kickers, right? it is plainly not random. We have a whole bunch of the best kickers in the league who repeatedly, year after year, finishes top 10 fantasy kickers, right? Each of the last three seasons, Justin Tucker, Tyler Bass, Daniel Carlson, these guys are all top 10 kickers every year. There's other guys, Jason Sanders, Younghoe Koo, who are right at the fringes of the top 10 or in the top 10 year after year. Like, the best kickers, often tied to the best offenses, consistently finish as very useful fantasy assets. This happens all the time. It is super weird that we call it random, that anybody calls it random. I think really there is a certain type of NFL fan that is just sort of in it for the visceral reaction that they have to like the violence of the game, and they have no time for specialists, and they don't want kickers in their fantasy foot. Like, fine. If that's the way you experience football and that's what you want in your fantasy life, fine. But just don't call it random, because it is clearly not random. The NFL itself is paying Justin Tucker a lot more than most running backs make, right? So like, the NFL values the skill that is involved in the position. I was just looking at Daniel Carlson today, doing a little kicker rankings update. You know, Daniel Carlson over the last 3 years has made 21 of 24 kicks from 50 plus yards. Like, just, I don't know, go to a football field and stand 60 yards away from the goalposts. Like, every made field goal from distance is a little miracle, right? And I think it's fine to have it in the game. As for how I draft it, almost nobody takes, you know, sometimes in a hometown league people do weird things, but almost no one in a typical fantasy league is going to take their kicker ahead of the final round. So I think it's fine to do that. Sometimes if I recognize that I'm going to be like, you know, where I am in terms of the turn or whatever, I'm going to be one of the last people to take a kicker, I might take them in the next to last round to make sure that I get one of those like Carlson, Tucker, Bass types. Like, I think that's a perfectly fine thing to do. Other things I try to prioritize when I'm looking at kicker, because it is often a position that you drop, right? Like, on their bye week, just look for somebody who has a late bye. This year, actually, most of the best kickers in the game, like most of the best real life kickers, actually have like week 13, week 14 buys. So there's a lot of that out there. So some of the top guys are actually like, you don't have to think about it at all until you get to December. So that's pretty friendly. Beyond that, there doesn't have to be a lot of thought that goes into this, but I am definitely an advocate for keeping a position in the game that is critical in reality.
I think you make a great case, and what should be a very obvious case for why kicking is not unpredictable. One, the skill-based factor, and obviously two, just the teams that are going to be in field goal position more often, the teams that are going to be kicking extra points more often. Like, yeah, those are where the best kickers are going to come from. Intuitively, that makes so much sense. I will say, usually I am not one of the persons to take a kicker early. Like, I'm not one of the ones to take that plunge if there is still a kicker involved. And I look, by the way, I'm with you, live and let live. There are many analysts out there that are just like trying to totally cancel and obliterate the kicker position. If you want to be that person, go for it. If you want to be, you know, the person that fights hard for kickers, you know, where there's like, you know, there's you, there's Linda Godfrey, there's Jen Eakins, like, yo, fight for the kicker and like, awesome. I love it. I'm totally live and let live with this. I don't have a strong opinion one way or another about kickers. But usually if I am in a league with a kicker, I don't end up being one of the first ones to take them. So you actually have me thinking there a little bit about the late buy thing. That does, I think, matter a lot. Two, though, I would say, and you can tell me if this is stupid, but if I'm not planning on taking one of those big time kickers, and I'm usually not, if the league is like, you know, the day before opening kickoff, this doesn't count. But if you're not going to take a major kicker, don't even bother taking one, honestly. Like,
yeah,
take some little upside flyer, you know, take a guy, and it doesn't work in this scenario, but a perfect situation is just Jerome Ford, right? Like, take Jerome Ford with your last round pick. I get he's hurt now, but just as an example, take Jerome Ford, and like, if Nick Chubb happens to, you know, go missing or something, or decide he doesn't want to play football on September 1st and, you know, he wants to go find himself in the mountains somewhere, you have now the starting running back for the Cleveland Browns, right? So I tend to do that. And then, like, okay, if Nick Chubb doesn't want to go find himself in the mountains somewhere, yeah, just go ahead and drop Jerome Ford and pick up a kicker then the day before the season starts. So I tend to approach kicker that way. You can tell me if that's a stupid thing to do or not.
Yeah, no. It's obviously a smart thing to do. You probably will find yourself either, you know, you'll either settle on a sort of placeholder kicker that you'll use for at least part of the season, or you'll start streaming it. I certainly understand if people don't enjoy streaming at kicker, right? There is a small edge that you can gain over a long period of time. Again, if you're just looking at, you know, Vegas lines and implied team totals, shouldn't take a genius to explain that, you know, if a team's implied total is like 32, the kicker's probably going to have a pretty good day. That is a field goal
stuck in there somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. That is highly correlated to kicker performance, but it's also like, you know, you have limited time in your fantasy life, and maybe you don't want to be, you know, studying Vegas lines with relation to kickers all year. I would get that. But your point is well taken. At Yahoo, you don't have to fill every active roster spot, so you can just leave it empty, and you can take some of those, like, contingent value running backs. You know, that's the difference between, I don't know, have Zamir White on your roster right up until the night before the opener, and then just add a kicker if and when Josh Jacobs returns to the fold. And then, you know, that's a totally reasonable lottery ticket. You'll probably be stuck again with one of the non, you know, Bass, Butker, Carlson, Tucker kickers. That's fine. They all score. You know, the other thing, the point I was going to make about this position, and I thought this is what I thought was so fun, you know, with Scott Fish and Scott Fishbowl allowing kickers in flex spots. They score almost exactly like wide receiver threes. Their final year-end point totals in most fantasy formats, they look just like the wide receiver threes. So it's not nothing in your roster, right? Like, it's also one of those positions where there's not a ton of separation between like the number four kicker and the number 12 kicker. But oftentimes the guys who are at the absolute top, they really stand out. So there is a little bit of an edge to be gained from that. And I just think it's, you know, kind of like your average wide receiver three, there's some boom bust to it too. Like, you know, kickers will finish with great seasons basically on the basis oftentimes of like two or three huge games. That definitely happens here.
Kickers are basically Will Fuller is what you're saying.
That is
by the
I'm
way,
saying.
Andy, This is why you have been like a fantasy legend since 2007. And in 2007, I was just trying to, you know, maybe get a girl to acknowledge that I existed in high school. Maybe just not friend zone me, because your Zamir White example was 1,000 times better and more helpful than my Nick Chubb might go find himself in the mountains stupid example that honestly Brett should just cut out of the podcast. No, you can leave it in. It's fine. Last thing on kickers, I think to maybe give credence to the people who not think the scoring is random, but the position is a little bit random. Andy, does it again to pick on your experience here and age, do you think that NFL teams now, it seems like they're treating kickers as more and more just disposable than ever? Like back when I was, you know, playing Madden on a daily basis, you know, back in, again, in high school and in college and stuff, it's like I pretty much knew who's kicking for everybody. I feel like I knew who was kicking for everybody. Now I do this as a job, and there's probably like 10 teams. I can't even tell you, like, I think it was an example recently. I was like, oh, that guy's kicking for that team. Shoot, I didn't even know that. Like, because it seems like these positions are so much more, these guys are so much more treated like they're disposable. Or like, oh, you had one bad game, we're kicking your ass to the curb by these NFL teams. Am I wrong in that? Is that anecdotal or what's the deal?
There is an interesting musical chairs that goes on with certain guys who are like always in the league. And you're always finding out that they're with new teams, right? Like, we've had this recently with McManus. You know, this, like, where is Michael Badgley today? Who knows, right? Like, he could show up with any team at any moment. So there's a little bit of that. I think that I think it's become one of those positions that is a little bit similar to running back in that the absolute elite specialists, right? Like the guys who are actually nails from like 60 yards. And again, that's, you know, that's Carlson, that's Tucker. That's like, think about Carlson going 21 for 24 from like 50 plus. That's crazy. That's not a percentage that most kickers are giving you. That's a real skill and a real talent. And like guys like that end up being worth a little bit of money. It's also a salary cap league, and this is an easy position to, you know, you can definitely find other people who can kick footballs, right? Right. So like, if, you know, if you've got a kicker who's making $5 million, $6 million and you're up against the cap, like this is an easy position to go cheaper on for sure. And I think it's become one of those spots where like really only those elite guys are going to become fixtures year in and year out. Koo is like that. You know, there's just a handful that probably belong at the top and are just like absolutely like precision weapons grade specialists from extreme distance. But that's not the whole league. There's not like 32 of those guys.
All right, let's move on to defenses. We're not just going to talk fantasy defenses. I do want to finish this by talking about some defenses that could be sneaky good this year and sneaky difficult for some of your fantasy players and offenses to go against. And that kind of leads me into my first point about defense. You said kicking, scoring and kicking performance is not random. We do know that defensive performance is not random, but it is very volatile year to year. Because a lot of it, these great defenses can be based on turnovers. We just know, like Aaron Schatz from formerly Football Outsiders, they're publishing the Football Outsiders Almanac at FTN this year. They've done a lot of research into showing the defensive performances, how volatile it is year over year. I always come back to those like 2017 Jaguars team. Remember, they were just like awesome on defense, and then that thing quickly eroded. I mean, I get like Jalen Ramsey, you know, got himself traded. A lot of things happened, but then now the Jaguars have been like also ran defenses for a while now. So that defensive performance over the year is very volatile. That's one thing we just have to say as we get into this defense discussion. But I also want to note, Andy, from a fantasy angle, it doesn't really, drafting a defense can be trickier than just like, I will take the best defense in the league every year. I mean, the 49ers are probably the best defense in the NFL right now. Maybe they seem like a fine fantasy pick, but you know, Scott has made the example with the Jets defense this year. I think the Jets are going to be really good, and I think they're going to be one of these teams that is not like pops up one year as a great defense and then regresses the next because they weren't very turnover based last year, and they bring back a lot of the same guys, and I think the offense keeping them in favorable positions is going to be good for them, like getting sacks and turnovers and stuff like that. But to Scott's point, like, you can't draft the Jets defense because they start off the year facing Buffalo, Dallas, New England, Kansas City, Denver, Philly before a week 7 bye when you're going to want to drop them anyways. There's like, you could start them against the Patriots and probably Russell Wilson in that stretch. But the rest of you don't want to start teams against the Bills and the Cowboys and the Chiefs and the Eagles and stuff. So, but by the end of the year, they finish Miami, Atlanta, Houston, Miami again, Washington, and Cleveland. And, you know, I know Miami sticks out as a really good team in there. I think the Falcons are going to be good, but, you know, who knows what Tua status is going to be, the whole thing. So I think it's just rather interesting that I think perfectly encapsulates all of what I just said of why drafting and playing defenses in fantasy could be difficult.
There are probably three defenses, the Niners, the Eagles, the Cowboys, where we know they, like, we know those defenses have some game wreckers. We know those teams are, we think we know, you know, we don't really know anything, but, we can, I think we all assume that those offenses are going to put their defenses in pretty good, pretty favorable situations all year where opponents become one dimensional and they can tee off. And like I'd be surprised if those three aren't, again, among the most useful fantasy defenses. And then we get to this vast middle ground from which, you know, some good ones are going to emerge. We're going to be like outrageously wrong on some others. The Washington football team from a couple years ago leaps to mind, where they had all these ascending stars and how can this defense not be great? And then they were immediately not great. Like, that happens each year. The Packers last year thought they were going to be great. They weren't really much from a fantasy perspective. This is tied to the fact that one of the big points I want to make here is that I think the way we score for defenses is pretty terrible in fantasy. it is heavily tilted toward touchdowns. Obviously touchdowns matter, right? Like, we want to score for touchdowns, but we don't score for enough stuff. Like, there's all sorts of things that are hugely important in real life that just sort of go unnoticed in fantasy, right? Like third down stops, fourth down stops, yardage against. There's all kinds of things that we could score for that we don't score for. And so we end up with, you know, the things that exclusively drive defensive scoring are touchdowns, which is, you know, that's not every year does the best defense actually finish with the most defensive touchdowns, right? Like, I think the Patriots were like the leading defense last year, maybe fact that, yeah, because they had like the 6, 7, 8 defensive touchdowns. That's
seven defensive touchdowns and one return touchdown. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that doesn't feel perfect to me. I mean, shoot, the Eagles had like 70 sacks and we're the number one defense. Like, that just, I don't know. It feels wrong. It feels like there are some things that we can do scoring wise that commissioners can do, at least in private leagues, to improve that a little bit. And most of us who don't end up drafting the Niners, the Cowboys, the Eagles, we're going to end up streaming this throughout the season. And it's kind of a nuisance, but there are some advantages to it. And the other point I always like to make about defenses when you stream them, you should really be thinking about the passing volume of the opposing offense. And sometimes we get caught up thinking, oh man, I'm facing, you know, Atlanta. That quarterback isn't any good. He's young. Well, he also didn't throw any interceptions last year and he barely threw, right? So like the things that drive defensive scoring are like pass attempts against, right? Like, we want interceptions, we want sacks, we want defensive touchdowns. And you're not going to get that against a team that is running the ball 40 times a game, right? Like, you're going to get that against an offense that wants to put the ball in the air 45, 50 times.
That's a great point. And why, I mean, again, like, the Cowboys are up there from a defensive perspective last year. You know, the Eagles, obviously, like you said, they sacked the quarterback a ton. That's why when I stream defenses, I almost always love to look at the Chiefs, who were the 8th best fantasy defense last year, because they're going to be put in those passing scenarios because of the guy that plays quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I mean, from a real life perspective, I kind of think the defense for Kansas City gets crapped on too much. They're 15th last year in EPA allowed, but they have Chris Jones. Right now, they don't have Chris Jones in camp. There's a contract situation going on there, but like, they have Chris Jones. They have a game record up there. They have some other pass rushers. Like, they're going to force opposing quarterbacks into mistakes because of those game scripts there. So I love that point by you. Just like, you want to think about that maybe even more than just how good is this defense even.
Yeah, the Chiefs are the perfect example of this, right? Because they will put you in a game script where you just have to stop running the football. And you know, like, even the best quarterbacks, if they're going to drop back 50 times, they're going to give up some fantasy points. They're going to get sacked. They're going to give the ball away.
Yeah, I think that's why. I mean, I'm surprised to find that the Jaguars were the 6th best fantasy defense last year, because I think the Jaguars had their problems on defense, but their offense was good and they had 4 defensive touchdowns last year. And I mean, they had 14 interceptions too. That was definitely part of it. That was up there. But
it's super, you're right, rare.
Defensive scoring, like, is so weird. They sacked the quarterback. They sacked the quarterback 35 times last year, did the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, even the Cardinals defense was like a mess. And, you know, they weren't a good fantasy defense either, but they had 5 defensive return touchdowns. Yeah. It can be a little messy.
You know, this is a lot of years ago now, you know, but you go back like, you know, 15 years, almost 20 years to, like, there was an era where we had a couple of defenses. The Bears leap to mind under Lovie Smith, where like the guiding principle of the defense was let's score. And some of that was a reflection of who was playing quarterback for the Bears at the time, I'm sure. But like, that was just the Lovie Smith thing. Like, right, you had Urlacher, you had Tillman, and it wasn't enough for them to rip the ball away from you. They were actively trying to score, and they were almost indifferent to yards against, right? They just wanted you to go on a 12 play drive where they had 12 shots to take to rip the ball away and find the end zone. And so they were like, the Bears of that era would sometimes put up just insane single season totals fantasy wise. Again, gave up a ton of yards, but the number of defensive touchdowns they would score, combined with the fact that you also had Devin Hester on that team, and if you included like special team points, like all of a sudden you've got like 10-12 touchdowns, right? They stick out in my mind as an exception to the rule of like defenses that you could really target and feel good about just because of the philosophy of the team.
Yep, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially again the offense that they played. Hey, maybe that's why the Patriots were number one in defensive touchdowns last year. Like, hey, we got to do something here, okay? Otherwise, yes. We're not scoring any points today. We know that a guy who probably should be coaching us is coaching the offense, okay? So let's make sure we get some touchdowns over here. Before we throw to the dynasty draft, I want to just go over some defenses that I think, because we know that defense is volatile, let's talk about some units that could be like sneaky difficult for opposing offenses to face this year. Number one, the Ravens. I know that doesn't seem sneaky, but they were kind of 14th in EPA per play allowed last year. There were moments, especially early in the season, when they had a new defensive quarter, you know, Mike McDonald, they were trying to figure things out. But man, when you go back and watch them like later in the year, that defense was cooking. I think the transition that Mike McDonald was trying to get done from like Wink Martindale's defenses, if you don't know much about Wink Martindale, blitzing man coverage, you know, like, he's kind of as everybody's playing these like soft zones and, you know, let's just try to take away the deep pass. Wink is one of the few guys that's like, nope, screw that. We're going to play man coverage and we're going to blitz. We're just going to put the other opposing quarterback through the blender. One of the few defense coordinators left doing that. He's currently a defense coordinator with the Giants. But that was a big transition, obviously, for the Ravens to go through. I think they're kind of number one on my list of teams that, like, if they're the number one defense this year, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, number one in the entire NFL, not just from a fantasy perspective. I'm talking like real life defenses.
I think this is a good call out because people may have in their head like the terrible performance against Tua last year, right? Tua had like 6 touchdowns against him. And then the year before, they finished the year like spectacularly bad because everybody was hurt. Like, it was an injury situation that you will rarely see across a defense. Like, any player who was an impact defender at all was missing. The whole secondary was out, right? Like, it was just bad at the end of the year. But that is not a reflection of like the talent level on that team coming into the season. And they are a really strong candidate, obviously, to finish top 10, possibly top 5.
Yep. I think the Panthers are also in there too. They're 17th last year in EPA allowed. And they were sort of the inverse of what I think could happen with the Ravens this year. If the offense takes a step, they're going to be in more favorable game scripts. That Panthers defense last year, when were they ever in a favorable game script with the offense that they were dealing with last year? I mean, even Sam Darnold was like number one in EPA per dropback or number two for a while because he was getting to play in situations where this defense was keeping the game close. And they were running the ball really well. Lost into Denver Broncos nightmare last year is that Jiro Evero, who is currently now the defensive coordinator there, did a really great job with that Broncos unit, especially early on when they were like fully engaged and they hadn't like traded away Bradley Chubb. There's some really good young pieces in Carolina. Derek Brown turned it on last year. Brian Burns is a big time edge defender. You know, Shaq Thompson's still there. They have a ton of JC Horn could take a step as a cornerback. They have a ton of really interesting players, and I think Evero's a guy to unlock them. So they're a team that could be one of the, you know, not a great team from last year, but a very good defense this year.
Yeah, Burns is the guy I was going to mention. Like, that's a pretty talented defense, and it's a really friendly, we think, division schedule as well, right? Like, there's no opponent within that division where you're like, can't possibly start a defense against that guy. Like, you know, I can start a defense against the Bucks and either Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask, and I could start a defense against Derek Carr, right? Like, there's no stay away opponent, obviously, on the schedule. And I kind of think that maybe all the Panthers wanted, and this, you know, not great for Bryce Young necessarily in year one, but I kind of think that the Panthers just want to run the ball 38, 40 times and hold you to 17 points and see how that all shakes out. Right. Like, I think that's probably going to be the plan going into the season. I think it's a sneaky good defense, just like on talent. I've got them. I hope I'm not lying about this. I think this is true. I've got them like top 12 right now. I've got them as a startable, draftable defense. I think they will be.
I think your logic there about the NFC South also applies to the AFC South as well, where there is a two rookie quarterbacks and one Ryan Tannehill or another rookie quarterback potentially at some point in Will Levis this year. Trevor Lawrence is obviously the outlier there, but I also have the Texans 18th last year in EPA per play, which, I mean, shout out to Lovie Smith. That seems rather high. And then the Tennessee Titans 22nd last year. I think that the obviously Texans, look, they hired D'Amico Ryans. He's just a great defensive coach. I think he's got some talent to work with. They take Will Anderson, who's a rookie pass rusher. Those guys don't always come along right away, but they have other players too. The cornerback they took last year in the top 5, Stingley, is a really good, I think, player. I think he'll be a better fit for this defense than he was for Lovie Smith's defense. And then the Titans, like, I think Shane Bowen might be the most, when I watch like defenses go against receivers on film, I think that the Titans defensive coordinator Shane Bowen might be the most underrated defensive play caller in the NFL period. But they get hurt every year. They were obliterated last year from a health perspective, and you could argue that they will be again, because Mike Vrabel really he drives these guys hard in practice. The Titans practice really, really hard. That's why Julio Jones didn't work out there. So I do wonder if, you know, that might be a consistent theme, if they're just always going to be banged up. But if they're healthy this year, I think they, those two defenses could be sneaky good in the AFC South.
Yeah, definitely injuries a big factor for the Titans last year. And like so much for me anyway, so much for the Texans comes down to whether Anderson is like a real game wrecker right away. Like if he's a guy who deserves that pick and who deserves that trade, well, if he deserves that trade, he's a Hall of Famer, right? And and he'll make an impact in year one. If he makes a huge impact in year one and he's a guy that, you know, you just can't keep your quarterback clean when he's on the field, they are at least of interest. They are a defense that we have to think about as one that has a chance to vault into sort of the top 10, top 12.
I put the Steelers on this list because they were shockingly like 23rd in EPA per play allowed, and they were only like the 20th-ish best fantasy defense last year. But TJ Watt missed so much time, and I just look at their depth chart, you know, and I think that's like Mike Tomlin gets these guys playing great every year, and I think this will be another one. The last one I'll say here, and again, it comes back to the NFC South. Dare I say that this might be the year that the Falcons are a good defense finally? They were, not surprisingly, 29th in EPA per play allowed last year. No kidding. Their defense is basically almost never good. But A.J. Terrell struggled last year with injuries. Their cornerback, they get Jesse Bates as a safety in free agency, who's a good player. You know, they bring in Calais Campbell. I think they still, every year, they need a real true edge rusher. They still don't really have that guy yet, I don't think. They have some young players who might step up, but if the Falcons offense takes the step, I think it will, and they're playing in those positive game scripts from an offensive perspective, could we see the defense finally step up? That's my longest shot here, but I just want to throw them out there as a sleeper candidate.
They are a team like the Panthers where, you know, I'm even more certain that the Falcons want to just throw the ball maybe 30 times and run it 35 times and, you know, dominate time of possession. Like this might not be great for the defense as a fantasy entity, right? Because they probably want to keep them off the field, right? They want to possess the football for most of the game, and grind you out. But, that is the path to having a defense that like is not bottom third in the league, right? You can at least protect them. It does seem like it's upgraded a bit, but I also do feel like that like Atlanta's probably missing the most essential pieces and the most difficult positions to fill in the NFL, right? On defense, I don't know that they have the pass rush that leads to a defense finishing among the elites in fantasy. And again, I don't know that the overall philosophy is going to get them there, but I don't think they're going to be absolute bottom of the league again.
Yeah, exactly. Like they need Arnold Ebiketie, their pick from a year ago, to step up and be a big time edge rusher. Grady Jarrett's a really, I think, underrated defensive tackle, a big interior player, but he probably hasn't played his best football of late. They need him to really step up there too. They just have a lot of guys that like they could throw at it. You know, again, like they signed Bud Dupree, they signed Calais Campbell. So if these guys have big time seasons and kind of recap, and Grady Jarrett included, like recapture their old form, then maybe we're talking about a defense to fear there. But yeah, there's certainly questions there. I do wanted to throw them out as kind of like my what if sort of candidate. But yeah, so a lot of potential interest there. Andy, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got to recap our most recent staff mock draft, a dynasty startup. All right. The team did a 10-team mock draft this week. Dynasty startup, Andy. Very exciting stuff here. I'm gassed up to talk about this with you. But first, I want to get off a general disclaimer about dynasty fantasy analysis before we really get into this. And it's, let me just go ahead and tell you, the listener, but basically maybe no one, but at the very least, very few people are going to admit to you about Dynasty Fantasy Football. You really should not give a damn what anyone else thinks about your team build, because frankly, no one cares about your opinion anyways. The reality with Dynasty, and I wrote this in the recap, like basically wrote something like this in the recap that I wrote for the site. The reality with building Dynasty rosters is that, like, it's kind of something a matter of personal preference, right? Like, there's subjective player evaluation that comes into the mix, along with like differing goal-based timelines. Am I like trying to compete or am I trying to rebuild? There's also varying opinions about position strengths and weaknesses across the entire thing. So honestly, like, please continue to listen to this podcast, but who really cares what anyone has to say about your team? I know me personally, I'm not, Andy, I don't know about you, but I'm not trying to play Dynasty Fantasy Football like it's some kind of pseudo stock market or pretending internet player values mean anything at all to individual league managers. Like, here's the deal. You can come to me and tell me I'm trying to trade for Brandon Ayuk and this is where he ranks on insert ADP or value based thing here. I'm like, well, kick rocks. I don't give a what that means, because I like Brandon Ayuk and I think he's a great player and I want great players that I like on my team. So there's something fruitless about Dynasty analysis in general, and I just wanted to get that off my chest because I love Dynasty. I think it's my favorite format to play because I love talent evaluation, really, and I think there's more talent evaluation in Dynasty than there is redraft. But I just want to tell the listeners out there and the people that read the article as well, don't care so much about like this stuff. This is a very opinion-based format, I think, personally.
Yeah, a couple things that I'll say generally about Dynasty that I think are just important points to make. Number one, different positions have very different time horizons, right? Like,
right.
My running back ranks for Dynasty are going to look almost exactly like my redraft running back ranks. I'm not making 5-year plans with running backs. And if you feel differently about that, just go back and look at the running back fantasy leaderboard from like 5 years ago and tell me where those guys are now, right? Like, it's not, it's the harsh truth of the position. So I'm not like, in this particular draft that we did, this particular mock, I had the number one overall pick. I went receiver there, and I was delighted to find Nick Chubb, who is pretty much my favorite running back in the NFL, there for me in round two, where I don't think he should have been, right? Like, and I get we're taking like Jahmyr Gibbs ahead of Chubb. We're taking like Bijan. There's a real argument there ahead of Nick Chubb, I suppose. But like, Just take the running back who's really good right now, because there's not a lot of promises at that position. Like, the NFL teaches us that year after year after year. And the other point that I'll make about Dynasty is you can just go ahead and try to win right now. You know, like, you often end up in leagues with Dynasty players who are clearly shooting for the multi-year reign as champions that they're going to have starting 3 years from now, 4 years from now.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you can, like, the edge that you can get in Dynasty is by recognizing that, like, wide receivers who are great right now can help you win this year. Travis Kelce is still the number one tight end to the Kyle Pitts zealots, but like, Travis Kelce is still the number one Dynasty tight end because he's the number one receiver on the Chiefs, right? And you can just go ahead and try to win the league now. Like, I actually think there's an argument. I don't know if anybody did it in this mock, but there is an argument for just approaching your Dynasty drafts as if it's a damn, you know, redraft league. And I think that would give you a huge edge, at least in the current season.
Oh, I think Dan Titus, who does some NBA work for us and also some fantasy football work from us, he did approach it like basically a redraft league, to the point that he even messaged me afterwards and was like, please don't fillet me for my team being, you know, super old, because this is how I approach Dynasty. It basically said a lot of what you just did there, that his team looks like a redraft league. There's not like a bunch of young dudes on it. I mean, there's some young guys
looking
later
at it
on
right now. Yeah. First nine picks are veterans. Like, he's got Keenan Allen in there. But they're all values. He took, man, like, this is what I'm talking about at running back. He took Derrick Henry in the fifth round.
Yeah.
That's outrageous. Like, that shouldn't happen. You know, it didn't take a rookie until round 10. I love it. Like, that's a good team this year. Again, you can just go ahead and try to win the league now.
Right. Your whole thought is what inspired that rant and how I directed it in the column starting the section here is that it's like, please don't be so ageist when you approach Dynasty. I get it. Like, you can be the guy who wants to win the league every year starting 3 years from now. I kind of want to be the person that wins the league now and then 3 years from now and 4 years from now, you know. And a great example in this mock is Davante Adams, right? Like, Davante Adams went at the bottom of the third round to our fearless leader, Jason Kubaka. And I'm going to pull back the curtain here and say that somebody on our editorial call was screaming at him to take Davante Adams in the end of the third round. And that somebody might be me. And my point in doing that is, like, I get there are receivers here that I like an awful lot, like DK Metcalf and even Jackson Smith and Jigba and Drake London, that went before T. Higgins went before Davante Adams. But I would say all of those guys in the next 2 years have no shot to be as good as Davante Adams is going to be in the next 2 years. And probably, like, even though I like a lot of those guys, again, they probably have a 0% chance to be as good as Davante Adams is ever for the, you know, for the, who, how he good he is right now. So it's like, I get the youth based part of it, but, and I know that's why I got into this rant a little bit, is because, like, you know, there are certainly some dynasty analysts out there like, two-year window. Who cares about a two? You can start winning the league right now, as you said. So we're on the same page with kind of how we view dynasty. You brought up the running back stuff. I was personally surprised, actually, that in our mock here, like, running backs kind of crashed the party in the first two rounds, mainly the first round. Five running backs went in round one. Three more went in round two. So the first round basically went like this. Andy takes Justin Jefferson, number one overall. Jamar Chase is number two. Bijan Robinson's number three. I think Bijan's totally justifiable as a first round startup pick because he's a uniquely talented player who is, he's already a round one redraft player. So he can certainly be a round one dynasty pick. Then it went Christian McCaffrey to Dan Titus, the aforementioned nursing home team. Garrett Wilson to myself. I did go young guy heavy, right? I actually have CeeDee Lamb and AJ Brown ranked ahead in my dynasty wide receiver rankings. I went ahead of Garrett Wilson, but they're all in the same tier to me. So I wanted to sort of experiment with, all right, what if I take Wilson? And I felt really good about it because in the second round, I took Stephon Diggs, you know, like the veteran in the second round, who's the lock for to be a top five receiver. So I think you can go a little, just again, that's what tiers are for. Sixth overall was Austin Eckler. Seventh was Saquon Barkley. Eighth was Jonathan Taylor. Ninth was CeeDee Lamb. And 10th was AJ Brown. And again, the second round, Breece Hall, again to Jason, I'll shout out Jason that I think Breece Hall will be a first round startup pick next year if he even has a nice end of the season this year. And then Jahmyr Gibbs, who you mentioned, was in the second round as well, as was Nick Chubb to yourself. So were you surprised that, like, typically dynasty drafts are just very wide receiver focused? There were a lot of running backs that went highly in this one.
I mean, the reason that they should be wide receiver focused at the top is not only, you know, how great the young wide receivers across the league are, but it's also a position that, like if we were really playing this thing out, you know, the number one pick, I didn't think twice about this. Like, Justin Jefferson is a near perfect player whose career is off to a literal perfect start. He's never missed a game. I'm getting him for, like, I've got the next 7 years of Justin Jefferson. Cool. To me, that he's just the obvious number one in this format. And that's the thing at wide receiver is, like, this is a much longer time horizon with these guys, right? It does not carry the injury risk that that running back does. So I was a little surprised to see, you know, especially some of the higher mileage running backs going in the middle of the first round while there were still young receivers out there who, again, if we're building this roster for, like, the next 5 years, 10 years, you know, man, like, Jefferson's going to be great. Garrett Wilson's going to be great in 5 years. I'm not going to make any promises about any running backs, but I know that Garrett Wilson is going to be a fantastic player 5 years from now. I know that Olave is going to be a fantastic player 5 years from now, right? Like, I would have definitely built with some of those guys before I started looking at running backs in the second round for me. And then, you know, I'm getting to, like, the 20th overall pick in this thing. I think Nick Chubb could easily be the RB1 over the next, like, two seasons. And that's really all, again, that's all I'm drafting for at running back. And so I was balancing long-term interests versus trying to, you know, build a team that can win the league this year. I thought that Jefferson and Chubb was a nearly perfect start.
I think your start was fantastic. And, you know, I think the difference between Chubb and Taylor and Barkley, Like, I think I might rather have Nick Chubb over all those guys, you know? So I think that was a, I think that was really a good one. I think that was a good pick by you. I was kind of surprised he fell. Yeah, I mean, even guys like AJ Brown, like, they've been in the league for a long time, but, you know, he's 26 years old. I mean, I think he's gonna be very good for the next 5 years. So yeah, there's the receiver stuff at the top is obviously it's my way to go for sure. I didn't take a running back until round five. That was something that also stood out to me, was those like second to third year running backs really fell. Guys like Travis Etienne, Ramondre Stevenson, Damian Pierce, Najee Harris. Obviously Josh Jacobs went in that range, but he's kind of a complicated guy right now. Not in the same age bucket either. You know, Javonte Williams, he went in this range again, complicated injury situation right now. But that stood out to me, that these like second, third year backs, that if you want to go receiver heavy early, which is how I shock did it, and I also took a quarterback early, but those guys being available to you in rounds like 4, 5, 6, you can build a pretty decent little running back core. And then again, you're just over the next few years going to attack that position pretty hard if you did hit all your receiver picks early.
Yeah. I mean, I got Tony Pollard in round five, and Pollard will often be like a late round two pick, middle of round two pick in redraft leagues. Like, that shocked me. Again, I think like Henry falling to round five is wild. It's crazy. Would never happen. And once again, at a position where you just should not be thinking 3 years out, 5 years out, like Derrick Henry in the fifth round is sick. That's just absolutely stealing.
I would have 100% taken him where I took Ramondre Stevenson the pick after if Dan Titus had not taken him. I really like Dan's team, Dan's nursing home team. I like it. Let's talk about quarterbacks here. Jalen Hurts, Pat Mahomes, and Josh Allen in that order went in round three. I took Josh Allen at 3.5. John Daigle from 4 for 4, who joined us, took Patrick Mahomes at 3.2. And you, Andy, took Jalen Hurts at 3.1. When's the right time to take a quarterback in Dynasty, in your opinion? Because, again, that was a little run, and there was another little run. And then, I don't know, man, I kind of liked the teams that just that waited. Like, again, Dan Titus, we're getting a lot of pop on this pod for Dan Titus here. But he just waited on quarterback, and I perhaps liked how his team ended. Yeah, perhaps too much. That'll be the last time we.
There should be a little mandatory first year hazing for Titus. We shouldn't. This is too much flattery.
I mean, literally, he is scheduled to come on the podcast. I think it's next week, and I stuck him with the most difficult episode, or at least the least fun episode, and we'll see what happens when we get there. But yeah, that's proper hazing. I'm being way too nice on this podcast to him right now, so that will be enough of that. But like I said, I think that, Andy, it's sort of the same thing we're having a conversation in redraft leagues right now. I feel like any strategy you approach at quarterback is kind of viable here.
First of all, quarterback is a very long time horizon position, right? Like, dynasty in a traditional dynasty league, I took Hurts here. I triggered the quarterback run. And some of that was the fact that I just knew that all of the top tier quarterbacks were going to be gone by the, like, if I didn't take a quarterback, the top of round three, those guys are all gone by the time we get back to me in round four, at least the absolute elite guys, like those top four. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wanted one of them. And like, you're drafting a quarterback in dynasty. And some of what I did here is shaped by my own experience in my favorite dynasty leagues, where like, I have one where I've got, you know, I've had Patrick Mahomes since the start of his career, and I'm going to have him for like 4 or 5 more seasons before I even have to make a call on him. I've piled up some titles. Like, I'm good every year. This is a one quarterback league, but I've got Patrick Mahomes, and like, the guy already has two of he has literally like the two highest point totals in the history of the position already to his credit. I feel the guy that I actually took here was Jalen Hurts, because I just want these next like 3 years or so of Jalen Hurts. I can't imagine that at some point in that stretch, he's not going to have the MVP season. He's got Brown, he's got Smith, he's got like 750 rushing yards a year in his back pocket, right? Like, this is a crazy setup. And I just want a little bit of this Jalen Hurts experience. So it's kind of a, you know, spin the wheel, pick your star quarterback between Allen and Mahomes and Hurts. I took Hurts here. It could have been anybody, but I definitely wanted one of them, because I've like, the quarterback position now, and you've written about this, I've written about this, it's so much different in terms of its impact than it was when a lot of us started playing fantasy. Like, there was a, you know, the reason like late round quarterback drafting became like people's brand is because it was definitively the smartest way to go, like 15, 20 years ago. But now we're in this period where, like, you know, all of the best per game scoring seasons, like basically all of them at that position in history, have been like within the last 5 years, right? Like, we are getting absolute golden ticket seasons from quarterbacks. And I think it is more important. Like, you can still get them late, and it's still good to look for them late. And we all, you know, I think we all understand the idea that, like, maybe Anthony Richardson could be that guy. Maybe there's other dual threat players out there who can be that guy. But, like, it's a huge edge to have a quarterback who puts up viable passing stats while also delivering rushing stats that make him like an RB2, right? Like, that's just unfair. And I wanted one of those guys.
I did as well. And same thought as you, where all my best dynasty teams are my Josh Allen teams, literally. And yeah. I'm like, I don't have to think about quarterback. Some of them are super flex leagues, but in this specific one, quarterback, like, I don't have to think about quarterback again for another, you know, 10 years, hopefully. Right.
Yeah.
I love that. I love not having to think about it. I mean, dude, Aaron Rodgers is like available on the waiver wire in this league. So if something, not God forbid, happens to Josh Allen, I'm fine.
Right.
I didn't even take a backup quarterback here. Many other teams did. I didn't even bother taking one. And I do think the value over replacement, like, and the opportunity cost is a little tougher for like the Justin Herberts where he went here, even the Anthony Richardson, Trevor Lawrence. Like, I think there are still good receiver picks and running back picks, but early quarterback is totally viable and my personal favorite to do for a dynasty draft like this. Speaking of wide receivers, I just got to make the note here. Wide receiver is so deep. It's just so deep with guys you can really like, okay? Like, you get to rounds 8, 9, 10, perfect example. It's tough for me to find a receiver pick that I don't like in this range. I mean, you've got a real mix here of veterans with short near-term windows that are really good. Mike Williams, Christian Kirk, Tyler freaking Lockett was the 10th round pick in this league. Was that to you? Did you take Tyler Lockett?
That's me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, freaking shout out to Andy Behrens. He knows ball. There's also, you can
right
take
after
big
Elijah
swings.
Moore. Like, that was like a right. tribute to you right in the middle of my draft.
And I was going to say, you can take big swings on talented second and third year receivers here. George Pickens, Rashad Bateman, Elijah Moore, both, like, all three of those guys have a chance to rocket up startup boards like this next year with just a few breaks this season. Even you can take like tier three rookie bets here. You know, the guys that have like a little bit of mixed bag of an outlook, but like Jalen Hyatt, Rashee Rice, Jonathan Mingo. I think Frank Schwab took him here, and that was my favorite pick there. So it's just like receiver, I'm not saying pass up early receiver because you want those stars, like you said, that are going to be good for a long time. But you can just round out a really nice receiver core in your drafts right now.
Yeah, it's funny in redraft leagues, I feel like, you know, there's a clear line of demarcation. I don't know exactly who the player is. Maybe it's like Nico Collins. Like, there's a line where the draft just goes immediately from guys that I feel really confident in to guys who are like, all of a sudden we're in like speculation territory, right? Like, mm-hmm. like, we haven't seen it yet. It might happen and I can tell myself a story, but like, we go immediately from, oh yeah, this guy is totally useful, to like, oh, I hope this guy is somewhat useful, right? But in Dynasty, where you get to dream on these guys a little bit, right? And you get to think about like, what is the upside if I hit on this pick, if I hit on this pick? All of a sudden, you know, Marvin Mims, you know, Josh Downs, Jalen Hyatt, Jonathan Mingo, you're not thinking of them so much as dice rolls for the current season. You're thinking, man, like, if this guy hits within the next couple of years, then I've got the full career of, you know, whoever, as they emerge into stardom. And, you know, there's like, I don't know, 65 guys on a dynasty board that I feel really good about at wide receiver. And I feel like in redraft, for whatever reason, there might be like 40 guys, there might be 45 guys. And then all of a sudden we're into like, what if territory.
You get to dream a little bit with these guys. That should be the new slogan for Reception Perception. So thank you, Andy. I'm gonna keep that one in mind. Last big structural point here. I thought about this draft. Tight end landscape is even weirder in Dynasty than it is in redraft. The earliest a tight end came off the board was 3.4, and it was Travis Kelce, as you mentioned. He's going into his age 34 season, and still, I think even the biggest like Dynasty stock portfolio youth-based drafter out there still can't make a credible argument as to why Travis Kelce shouldn't be the first player off the board in Dynasty startup. But if you just look at this draft, and again, go read the recap on the website. I'm not going to lay it all out here. there was never a run. It never felt like a run was about to happen at the position. There was just these like weird little pockets of dynasty picks in the dynasty draft. Like, again, it was Kelsey earlier. It was the middle rounds, and then it just went on and on and on. And then it's like, okay, somebody sprinkles in Dalton Kincaid, somebody sprinkles in Sam Laporta, you know? So I think this position is even weirder in dynasty than it is in redraft.
Can I just say that this is the first, I don't know how many drafts and mocks I've done. I feel like I did a million of them during like magazine season, for different outlets. This was the first I had done in which I did not land Sam Laporta. Dalton took him, and I just took that as a personal attack, and started taking some Niners late in the draft to try to get back. I was just outraged. I'm always the Laporta guy. Like, I'm the one guy who thinks that Sam Laporta, I'm the one guy in the whole industry who, like, I've got an Iowa bias and all that. I just think his situation is perfect. I think he's a great player. I think that guy can be like a top six fantasy tight end this year, just straight up this year. And I have learned to be disciplined enough to, like, I've learned that I don't have to draft him that way, right? I can just draft him as like the 12th tight end off the board because nobody shares my opinion about Sam Laporta. And then Dalton just out of nowhere swoops in and takes my guy, and I'm still not over it.
You know, I wrote in the draft blueprint, which I'm sure you've read all, you know, 5,000 words, Andy, but, you know, I linked you guys all in it. And that was not my only shout out to you, but my favorite shout out to you was talking about, hey, rookies that matter this year, you have to care about tight end rookies this year. And like gave points about why I felt that way about Dalton Kincaid and points about why I felt that way about Luke Musgrave. And just for Sam Laporta, I wrote, and Sam Laporta is Andy Barron's favorite player, so, you know, pay attention. So, yeah, you are the Sam Laporta guy. Are you going to be in your, like, Sam Laporta, I don't know, mask or Sam Laporta t-shirt at the Fantasy Expo? What's the deal?
I have already thrown together the wardrobe for the expo, where we do have a loud shirt night. Not everybody participates, which is fine.
Which night is that?
Usually on, like, on the day that we draft, on Saturday, like the Saturday night party, I got something good in the okay. works. I think it will.
Yeah, it's,
I think it will it particularly the, be appreciated by our out? NBC colleagues. No, okay. I did tweet. It's that's a version of it. I did tweet out a you know, I have a couple of shirts this year. I tweeted out a lovely Brad Evans loud shirt, but I got another one in my bag that I think is even better that I plan to wear to the draft.
Well, I'm gassed up about that, and I'm glad to know about loud shirt night, because I am a loud shirt enthusiast, but I
that's
probably
your
not in this,
yeah,
it is in my wheelhouse, but it's not probably quite the same volume as yours, I will say. But we'll see, we'll have to find out on Saturday. We'll be discussing it on our Saturday podcast, I guess, at the Fantasy Football Expo. But yeah, honestly, yo, Eckler's Edge, that's the pass. Like, Eckler's Edge, Wired, you know, me and Austin. When are we getting the Andy Barron, Sam Laporta podcast here under the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show?
That, like, I don't know. We can't put me in a room with, like, Kittle or Laporta. I'd be too much of I couldn't be a professional. I just know that I couldn't be a professional. You have to know your limits.
Is there any jealousy on you that, like, Kittle made a, you know, we did the Super Bowl thing together, and like I made him laugh to the point that he like slapped my chest. Is that handsy feelings?
I've had some wonderful interactions with Kittle. We should share that personality with the world. I'm happy for George to get out there and interact with all of the industry's experts. He's not mine alone.
All right. Well, this has gotten weird enough. We are going to wrap this Dynasty mock recap up with, people would not be happy if we didn't have some sort of player debate here. We talked big structure stuff. Let's have a little player debate to end this thing. It's fantasy draft season, and we all want to build the perfect team to dominate our friends, family, and coworkers. So for this week's Build Your Team, courtesy of Toyota Racing, we're tackling this major fantasy debate. Andy Barron's, who is the most underrated dynasty wide receiver?
For me, this is actually Marvin Mims, and there's a fair amount of buzz about a whole bunch of young players. I feel like I haven't heard enough about Mims. First of all, he's the first player drafted by the Broncos in the Sean Payton era. Like, I think Payton is pretty in on him. They traded up for him. Stellar, coming off an absolutely stellar collegiate season at Oklahoma. Highlight catches averaged for like a 3-year college career about almost 20 yards per catch. Just a wonderful player who's headed to an offense where, like, I feel like there's a lot of people who are buying the idea of a Russell Wilson bounce back. That's a somewhat sketchy and underwhelming and unproven receiving core, right? Like, Cortland Sutton didn't distinguish himself last year. We've never seen Jerry Jeudy do it over the course of a full season. After the really unfortunate injury to Tim Patrick, I just feel like there's a clear opportunity for Mims to be super relevant in year one, perhaps entering 2024 as the number one receiver for the Broncos. I just think it's all the arrows are pointing up for that kid. And he was just a wonderful college talent that is not getting nearly enough buzz.
I love your pick there. I also love that you were way more bold than I was, because you took a guy who went in round 11 of our mock here. I'm going to go to a guy that I took in round 6, and I get it's like, oh, round 6, that's pretty high. But I think Jahan Dotson is the most underrated wide receiver dynasty asset right now, because when you think about the guys that were drafted last year, we all agree that, like, the top three are Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, put him in what order you want, and then Drake London there. I think he's right there. You know, then there's the guys like Christian Watson, there's George Pickens, there's Treylon Burks. And Jahan Dotson, in my opinion, even better than Christian Watson, is somewhere between those players, those groups of players. I think he's closer, Andy, to the Olave, Wilson, London group than he is to the Christian Watson group. He was just a straight up better football player than those three receivers last year. And he was a straight up better college prospect than those guys. And I thought he was a great college prospect, great reception perception profiles as a collegiate player at Penn State. But he even outkicked my expectations as a rookie with his ability to play outside. 87th percentile success rate versus press coverage in his rookie season in reception perception, playing as almost an exclusively outside player. He did some slot stuff, but he wasn't their slot receiver. That's Curtis Samuel. I love Terry McLaurin. You and I both are on the same page about Terry McLaurin, but you're allowed to like two receivers from one team. I get the situation is sketchy with the quarterback and, like, what's the future of the franchise, all that stuff for Jahan Dotson, but in Dynasty specifically, you want to bet on talent. And I think that people are still underrating Jahan Dotson's talent. You know, people tweet out the RP charts and they're like, oh, look at this. And he's just a route runner. He's just a small route runner. Well, what these goofball sizists don't realize is that Jahan Dotson also is just as good as making explosive downfield contested plays and getting wide open on vertical routes as Christian Watson, as George Pickens, and certainly more than Treylon Burks. So I think that, look, I shot a little bit higher than you here. You went Marvin Mims. I went Jahan Dotson, but I think he is the most undervalued, underrated dynasty asset right now.
His highlight reel on just, like, contested plays last year was so great. He was such a fun watch. Week to week, you know, game to game, missed some time due to injury, but it didn't cost him, certainly in terms of fantasy scoring, in terms of touchdowns. He was a walking highlight, man. I love that call.
All right, so there you have it. Whether you're on the field, on the track, or building your fantasy roster, you've got to have a great team around you. That was Build Your Team. Thanks again to our friends at Toyota Racing. All right, that's going to do it for this show. Jammed packed. I had no idea this show was going to go as long as it did, Andy. I didn't intend that, but I should have known better that us two knuckleheads talking about kickers and defenses and all this nonsense, and then how excited I was about the Dynasty Draft. You know, and I mean, I had a you people out there. I didn't even once do my fancy nerd voice during the Dynasty discussion. I had that queued up. I had the Jahan Dotson Love Fest queued up. I should have known better. Long podcast, longer than I intended to, Andy, but it was a great one, and I enjoyed this show, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing you very, very soon.
Yeah, can't wait to see you this weekend. It's going to be a blast. The expo is always really fun. This was good. I feel like this was loaded with little nuggets. This was a very useful podcast, I would say.
I definitely think it was higher on the usefulness scale. I knew it was going to be high on the fun scale, but I think it ended up being a very high on the useful scale, higher than I imagined when I was like, let's put a kickers and defenses preview here on positional preview week. Well, as we said, Andy and I are off to the Fantasy Football Expo in Canton. If you are out there, come up and say hi. I'm very, I'll admit, very nervous from, like, a social perspective to this is being around a bunch of people that I only know from the internet, you know, and now they get to see the real. I don't know. I'm very nervous about it, but I'm very excited to be hanging out with people all weekend. Andy included, all of you included. Please come say hi. I hope to meet as many people as possible next week. From the Expo in Canton, we're going to kick off Strategy Week with a special on-location pod. If it's a social media app, Yahoo Fantasy is there. At Yahoo Fantasy on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Look at that synergy, baby. I'm at @MattHarmon_BYB on whatever X, Instagram, whatever platform you want to find me on. That's at Andy Behrens. You can catch us on YouTube as well at Yahoo Sports. We'll be back at you Monday with Strategy Week. Until then, enjoy the weekend. We're out.